face of it, there is nothing to confront, just hypocrisy and inconsistency, while we pretend that we are alone with the standards bared and the profit shared. We should count our days.
Well, here we are once again at the pinnacle of the national voting cycle. Currently, large amounts of money, energy, and rhetoric are being spent in the name of democracy by the two major parties, and to a much lesser extent by the third parties of this country, to bring this cycle to its four-year climax. We were all taught in school that voting was not only a right but also a duty of any citizen of voting age in this republic of ours. We were also told that a simple majority of those votes cast by the citizens was all that was needed in any general election to decide which candidate would be recognized as the winner of the office. Well, there appears to be a large difference between the theory we were all taught and the reality that we all experience today. So, through the words of experts and some music and satire by contemporary artists, let me try to present to you a vision of the failures within this elemental democratic process, one that tends to use up all of your good focus and energies and results in no meaningful change, as if by design.
Just briefly give, if you can, a synopsis of the arguments you've been making over the last, say, 5 years now.
Well, to put it in a nutshell, there is copious, specific evidence, especially by now, that the Bush regime has been engaging in massive election fraud systematically since 2000. That the last two presidential elections were stolen. That the 2004 election wasn't even as close as we think. And that they have also clearly rigged a number of congressional and gubernatorial elections nationwide, including Don Siegelman's contest for re-election in 2002 in Alabama, Max Cleland's senatorial re-election race in Georgia that same year. And crucially, what all this means is that the next election is by no means a sure thing and will not perhaps be decided on the basis of what people actually want or how they actually vote. So Loser Take All is a collection of 14 essays that I edited by a range of scholars, journalists, and activists dealing with different aspects of this, let's call it what it is, this conspiracy, and also devotes a number of chapters to steps that the Bush regime has taken over the last few years precisely to try to steal this next presidential election as well. So it's and I want to put this as succinctly as I can, taking note of the fact that the implications are extremely devastating, and particularly shattering to a lot of the ways in which we usually think about elections. You know, we often think, for example, well, there'll be, you know, we got to worry about the smears that are coming from the Republican Party. We have to worry about Jerome Corsi's book, because obviously John Kerry lost last time because he was Swift voted. Well, that whole way of going at it may be a little bit beside the point, because there is every evidence that Kerry didn't lose and that he was, you know, actually deprived of a considerable margin.
Well, then how do you secure such a piece of equipment then?
You don't. You use paper ballots.
Okay.
I can't make it any clearer than this. You cannot have secure electronic voting. It doesn't exist.
Turn on the television. Open up a magazine. Hear the broadcast of the massacre. Read about some tragedy. See the man with a pretty face. Summarize the daily news. Turn the pages, hear the whispering. All the voices telling you everything's fine. Everything is okay. Don't you worry about
things. Let me just give you one example of the kind of evidence that's come to light since. A guy named Richard Hayes Phillips spent 3 years with a team of election integrity activists literally scrutinizing every paper ballot that was cast in 18 Ohio counties. And the result of that study, and they took 30,000 digital photographs of individual ballots, the result of that study is a book called Witness to a Crime that includes a CD so that you can actually pop it into your computer and look at hundreds and hundreds of examples of what they found. And what they found was thousands and thousands of ballots that had been manually altered. People had darkened the box next to Kerry Edwards, and someone, in every case, had covered that box with a little paper circle and then darkened the box next to Bush Cheney. Now, that alone accounts for, you know, at least an equal number, a number equal to the number that Kerry supposedly lost by. That doesn't even begin to take account of the widespread vote flipping that people witnessed on the machines as they tried to use them throughout the state, and incidentally, Bob, throughout 11 other states. It doesn't take account of what happened with the central vote tabulators that are actually owned by a family of prominent and extremely zealous pro-life extremists. It doesn't begin to take account of the effect of the deliberate undersupply of working voting machines in Democratic precincts only. So what we're talking about here is a vast menu of tactics that were used in order to alter the vote, to sway the vote count. So I don't think it's at all an exaggeration to surmise, on the basis of all these different tricks and so on, that Kerry may have actually won Ohio by well over 500,000 votes. Bobby Kennedy Jr. did a piece for Rolling Stone on Ohio a couple of years ago, and he interviewed everybody, interviewed Republicans, he examined the evidence. The article was carefully vetted by Rolling Stone's lawyers, and his conservative estimate at that time was that Kerry won by 350,000 votes. Now, since that piece came out, a lot of other stuff has come to light.
The fundamental structures that Diebold has used to set up their voting machines are inherently flawed. They're what I would consider IT junk.
Down on Wall Street where the money grows, suits are marketing the earth, driving around town in their fancy new cars, bearing out much they are worth. Corporate people and corporate lives, corporate land and corporate sky. But this is just the way it's gotta be. Can't you hear their lullaby? Everything's fine. Everything is okay. Don't you worry about a thing now.
Moving on. If you planned on following the presidential election in November, you might want to plug your ears. A big election spoiler is coming up. A minor software glitch at the Diebold Corporation today caused thousands of electronic voting machines to accidentally release the results of the 2008 presidential election months ahead of schedule. According to the group of military and corporate leaders that has chosen every American president since Eisenhower, Diebold's mistake marks the first time the nation's leader has been revealed prematurely.
I don't even know if I can enjoy the sham election now that I know who's going to win.
If you can't trust your shadowy overlords to keep it secret, what is the purpose, really, of voting in the puppet democracy?
I'm fine with it. I mean, he was going to get my meaningless vote anyway.
Despite the leak, all of the presidential candidates have so far said they'll continue their campaigns. Joining us now to talk about the leaked results is Diebold PR spokesman Ernie Kenilworth. Mr. Kenilworth, this was quite a mistake.
And we at Diebold would like to formally apologize to all of our shadowy puppet masters. This will not happen again. Please have mercy on us.
Do you think that people will still even vote in this election?
We certainly hope they will. This country is based on the fantasy that the government is the voice of the people. Going through the motions of voting and keeping the kingmakers dealing secret is central to our culture.
Why do we need electronic voting machines in the first place? They're just not as reliable as our cloaked masters, no matter how good the software gets.
Well, I understand people's concerns, but from now on, we at Diebold will see to it that we properly safeguard the illusion of democracy for all Americans.
Well, let's hope so. So for those of us who will watch, what can we expect on election night?
Oh, the same great show that you have always seen. We will be pretending to count votes, and we will be running an ongoing total throughout the night.
But wouldn't it be possible for them to just choose a different president so that we'll still have that same great surprise?
No, I don't think so. However, that does not rule out the possibility for a staged assassination after the president has been placed in office.
Oh, I take it that's a hint.
You won't get anything else out of me today, Gina. I've already said too much.
All right. Well, thank you for being with us, Mr. Kenilworth. After the break, researchers say they have found a cure for awakeness.
There is a guy in D.C. named Stephen Spoonamore. It's spelled exactly the way it sounds, Spoonamore, whose revelations are now driving a major RICO lawsuit based in Ohio. This guy, first of all, is a lifelong conservative Republican. Second of all, this guy was working with the McCain campaign until several months ago when he saw what the McCain campaign actually has planned. And finally, Spoonamore is a noted expert on computer fraud. In fact, that's what he does for a living, is help companies and governments spot computer fraud. Now, although right-wing, Spoonamore is a very principled guy, and what he has done is basically decided to become a whistleblower. And he has named Karl Rove's IT guru, the guy who helped Rove do whatever Rove wanted done, a guy named Mike Connell, who helped the Bush campaign in Florida in 2000, who helped the Bush campaign immensely in Ohio in 2004, who helped the Republicans in Alabama in 2002, whose fingerprints are all over this stuff, whom Spoonamore knows personally. And Spoonamore, incidentally, has reams of documentary evidence to back up every claim. The fact is, that it is all true. It is not conspiracy theory. It is not speculation. We know exactly who has done this and how they have done it. So we really well past the point when we need to be sort of parsing numbers and putting together bits of circumstantial evidence. These guys have been promoting an agenda so extreme that they have had to rely on fraud and vote suppression in order even to come to power. They could never really win an election in this country. And although I think that Obama has a very good chance, primarily because a lot of the big money is in his corner. I mean, Fox News, amazingly enough, has now started attacking McCain's commercials, you know. Even though, you know, I think that much of Wall Street is in Obama's corner, we cannot in any sense count out the commitment and the zeal of the Bush machine, which is in fact in charge of McCain's campaign, and which has ample motivation not to give up power because, of course, you know, they've committed a lot of serious crimes. So, you know, between them and the Christianists who are all for this campaign, I think we have to be extremely attentive to the possibility that they may try to steal. Well, they will try to steal this race, and they could conceivably manage to do it.
We found a better way of making it seem clean. We built an electronic voting machine, and then we sold these suckers nationwide. But we're the only ones who know what's on the inside. You push the buttons and our voting machine keeps track. We made it so it's very easy to hack. Call for a recount, it will probably fail, cause our machines don't leave no paper trail. The billionaires don't want you to vote this year. We'll send you a message that's loud and clear, that the votes can't be counted in your community. Why even register? Don't waste your energy. Don't go to the polls on election day, cause we bought the election and it better go our way. And on election night we'll sit back and gloat. The billionaires don't want you to vote.
All people, all parties, all national leaders, all nations believe in their own virtue. But even more so, more than anything else in the world, more than all of these things I've been talking about, they believe with the utmost ferocity, with the utmost dedication, they believe in protecting and advancing their own interests. And they will kill to make sure those interests are advanced.
There are deliberately places built into the Diebold machines that allow you to insert data or make updates after the machine is running. A socket layer is supposed to, once you activate a socket session or a secure session, you're not supposed to be able to change an operating procedure or code. That's not true with Diebold machines. While the machine is running, if you have administrative override from the touchscreen layer, you can actually change the way the machine is operated. You can reprogram it. They sell it as a feature in case you need to make an update during the day.
But there's a reason. There's a reason. There's a reason for this. There's a reason education sucks, and it's the same reason that it will never, ever, ever be fixed. It's never going to get any better. Don't look for it. Be happy with what you got. Because the owners of this country don't want that. I'm talking about the real owners now. The big, the wealthy, the real owners, the big wealthy business interests that control things and make all the important decisions. Forget the politicians. They're irrelevant. The politicians are put there to give you the idea that you have freedom of choice. You don't. You have no choice. You have owners. They own you. They own everything. They own all the important land. They own and control the corporations. They've long since bought and paid for the Senate, the Congress, the state houses, the city halls. They got the judges in their back pockets. And they own all the big media news, all the big media companies, so they control just about all of the news and information you get to hear. They got you by the balls. They spend billions of dollars every year lobbying to get what they want. Well, we know what they want. They want more for themselves and less for everybody else. But I'll tell you what they don't want. They don't want a population of citizens capable of critical thinking. They don't want well-informed, well-educated people capable of critical thinking. They're not interested in that. That doesn't help them. That's against their interest. That's right. You know something? They don't want people who are smart enough to sit around the kitchen table to figure out how badly they're getting fucked by a system that threw them overboard 30 fucking years ago. They don't want that. You know what they want? They want obedient workers. Obedient workers. People who are just smart enough to run the machines and do the paperwork and just dumb enough to passively accept all these increasingly shittier jobs with the lower pay, the longer hours, the reduced benefits, the end of overtime, and the vanishing pension that disappears the minute you go to collect it. And now they're coming for your Social Security money. They want your fucking retirement money. They want it back. So they can give it to their criminal friends on Wall Street. And you know something? They'll get it. They'll get it all from you sooner or later because they own this fucking place. It's a big club, and you ain't in it. You and I are not in the big club. And by the way, it's the same big club they use to beat you over the head with all day long when they tell you what to believe. All day long, beating you over the head in their media, telling you what to believe, what to think, and what to buy. The table is tilted, folks. The game is rigged. And nobody seems to notice. Nobody seems to care. Good, honest, hardworking people, white collar, blue collar, doesn't matter what color shirt you have on. Good, honest, hardworking people continue. These are people of modest means. Continue to elect these rich cocksuckers who don't give a fuck about them. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't give a fuck about you. They don't care about you at all. At all. At all. Yeah. You know?
They do not allow the code any kind of validation or check that allows for a local auditor to confirm that it is in a configuration pattern appropriate for voting. So if you are going to set up, let's look at a Diebold ATM, which we work with a lot. If you're going to set up a Diebold ATM system at a bank, every line of code in that machine, which should be 30 to 35,000 lines of code, is inspected by four or five people where each of the fields are confirmed that they're going to pass the information correctly to the machines that pass out the money, to the machines that take and validate your card, to the little motors that push your card back out to you, to the receipt printers, and to the integrated databases on the back end. No process inside of that is not followed with a four eyes operation, meaning two different people have to be looking at each step of the process at each step of the way. And those people are not from Diebold. One of them is from the installation group and one of them is from the bank. Otherwise, the machine is not certified for use.
And this is not happening with respect to an electronic voting machine?
Not my knowledge.
So what you're saying is there's more security regarding the dispensing of a $20 bill and the fact if you don't get that $20 bill, there is more of an audit system set up?
Of course.
Lynching by laptop. If you're black, the chance that your ballot will not be counted.
Lynching by laptop.
Is 900% greater than if you're white. That's in Florida.
Lynching by laptop.
And that's nationwide. If you are Hispanic,
lynching by laptop
is 500% higher if you're brown. And if you're a Native American, forget it.
Lynching by laptop.
The report of the hit list, what we call caging list by the Republican Party,
lynching by laptop,
knocking off voters illegally by racially targeting voters to challenge their vote.
Lynching by laptop.
That ran at the top of the BBC Nightly News. That went international.
Lynching by laptop.
We couldn't get a word of that story in the United States. You have a highly stratified class society, which also tends to work partly along racial lines. When we're talking about not counting the vote, these are votes of people who don't count. We're talking about economic powerlessness, which is then reflected in the right to vote. You've got an apartheid voting system.
Lynching by that.
We don't need robots to pick our president for us or any other candidates.
Lynching by laptop.
Countries like Sweden, Britain, and others, they don't lose votes by the millions as we do.
Lynching by laptop.
They use paper ballots, okay? Why are we using machines?
Lynching by laptop.
We have some real problems with electronic voting, privatization of the voting system. When we're talking about not counting the vote, these are votes of people who don't count.
Lynching by laptop.
Their only crime is voting while black, okay? You've got an apartheid voting system. The mystery missing votes in New Mexico, the mystery missing votes in Ohio, the mystery votes in Florida, Colorado, Arizona, Iowa.
Of course, this doesn't even begin to touch upon the problem of who even gets on a ballot.
Here they are again, the fabulous, the fantastic, the one, the only, the Android Sisters!
Way, way, way back, there were elephants
and donkeys romping in the playpen.
And even though
it wasn't their playpen, no one else was allowed to play.
They made sure
it was very expensive
to play in their playpen. Yes, children, it was all a game.
But the elephants
and donkeys made the rules.
And the rules were,
if you were not an elephant
or a donkey,
maybe you were a buffalo
or a bull
or a swan
or a snake,
well, tough. The elephants
and donkeys
made sure no one else
was getting into
their playpen.
No way,
no sir.
They bit each other on the ears. They kicked each other in the rumps. They trumpeted, they hee-hawed.
All sound bites, you know.
But some people thought,
why don't we have whinnies?
And barks and meows and oinks and hisses. But nope.
No one else
was allowed in their playpen.
Now in other lands,
they had bears
and bulls
and buffaloes
and green things. No one was sure what the green things were.
But anyway,
people put up with that elephant and donkey crap for the longest time.
You wouldn't believe how long.
Well,
you probably would.
People kept clamoring for change.
Hey, brother, can you spare some change?
But nope,
no change.
What did we get?
More elephants,
more donkeys.
Oh, democracy. Oh, poor democracy.
Once lofty.
With branches
that spread and shaded all. Now whittled down
to a sliver of a
sound bite. Trumpets.
And hee-haws.
And keep-its.
And trumphaws.
And pulpits.
You can't tell the difference anymore. What was once an elephant
became an elecky.
What was once a donkey
became a dog fant.
Yep. They were playing in
their playpen by themselves for too darn long.
So, remember, children,
your vote counts.
Well, it counts if you vote for, you know.
Let's hear it for the Android Sisters! Yeah!
We live in a country in which a person cannot get elected president if he openly doubts the existence of heaven and hell. This is truly remarkable. Given that there is no other body of knowledge that we require our political leaders to master, even a hairstylist must pass a licensing exam before plying his trade in the United States. And yet those given the power to make war and national policy, those whose decisions will inevitably affect human life for generations, are not expected to know anything in particular before starting to work. They do not have to be political scientists, economists, or even lawyers. They need not have studied international relations, military history, resource management, civil engineering, or any other field of knowledge that might be brought to bear in the governance of a modern superpower. They need only be expert fundraisers, comport themselves well on television, and be indulgent of certain myths. Our president regularly speaks in phrases appropriate to the 14th century, and no one seems inclined to find out what words like God and crusade and wonder-working power mean to it. Not only do we still eat the offal of the ancient world, we are positively smug about it. Gary Wills has noted that the Bush White House is currently honeycombed with prayer groups and Bible study cells. It does not seem out of place to wonder whether the myths that now saturate our discourse will wind up killing many of us, as the myths of others already have. It seems extraordinarily likely that our descendants will look upon many of our beliefs as both impossibly quaint and suicidally stupid. It is time we admitted, from kings and presidents on down, that there is no evidence that any of our books was authored by the creator of the universe. The Bible, it seems certain, was the work of sand-strewn men and women who thought the earth was flat and for whom a wheelbarrow would have been a breathtaking example of emerging technology. To rely on such a document as the basis for our worldview, however heroic the efforts of redactors, is to repudiate 2,000 years of civilizing insights that the human mind has only just begun to inscribe upon itself through secular politics and scientific culture. We will see that the greatest problem confronting civilization is not merely religious extremism. Rather, it is the larger set of cultural and intellectual accommodations we have made to faith itself. Religious moderates are in large part responsible for the religious conflict in our world, because their beliefs provide the context in which scriptural literalism and religious violence can never be adequately opposed. Every sphere of genuine discourse must, at a minimum, admit of discourse, and hence the possibility that those standing on its fringe can come to understand the truths that it strives to articulate. This is why any sustained exercise of reason must necessarily transcend national, religious, and ethnic boundaries. There is, after all, no such thing as an inherently American or Christian or Caucasian physics.
I believed that America was a democracy, and I took that really seriously. And I never cut the wink that it's a democracy for some people, not for other people.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome. Good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
The framers of the Constitution were very troubled with the increasingly insurgent spirit, rebellious spirit, among the common population. There were attempts to take over state governments. There was broad agitation. And the wealthy class looked to a national government as a means of protecting their interests, as a means of building a stronger mechanism of national control. Most historians say very little about the actual plight of the common people in that time. Most of the agrarian population, and about 85% of Americans in 1787 lived in the agrarian sector, most of them consisted of small farmers, tenants, or indentured servants. Indentured servants were white people who were in indenture, that is, they were in conditions of servitude. It wasn't quite slavery because it was for a fixed time and they could get out eventually. They could work their way out. These people were burdened by heavy rents, ruinous taxes, and low incomes. To survive, they frequently had to borrow money at very high interest rates. To pay their debts, they mortgaged their future crops. When you mortgage your future crop, you go still deeper into debt. So large numbers of them were caught in that cycle of rural indebtedness, which is today still the common faith of many agrarian peoples in many countries who were in the grip of the moneyed interests. Throughout this period, by the way, newspapers complained of, quote, increasing numbers of young beggars in the streets. Economic prisoners crowded the jails. Many were incarcerated for debts or non-payment of taxes. And among the American people, there grew the feeling that the revolution against the English crown had been fought for no good reason.
I know what you're trying to do.
I'm trying to free your mind, Neo. But I can only show you the door. You're the one that has to walk through it.
Living in the wasteland of the free. Preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines. And this speech is growing increasingly unkind. They say they are Christ's disciples. They don't look like Jesus much to me. And it feels like I am living in the wasteland of the free. We got politicians running races on corporate cash. Now don't tell me they don't turn around and kiss them people's ass. Hey. You may call me old-fashioned, but that ain't true democracy. Feels like I'm living in the nice land of the free. We got CEOs making 200 times the workers' wage. But they will fight like hell to keep from raising the minimum wage. And if you don't like it, mister, they will ship your job to some country. And if you
The 2008 presidential race heats up. A new survey finds that again this year, the number one issue among voters is bullshit. And joining us now to discuss the survey is the director of political polling at the Shuttleworth Research Center, Kip O'Leary. Mr. O'Leary, now we all know that bullshit is the deciding factor in most elections, and this poll says that this election will be no different.
That's right. When it comes to electing the leader of the free world, voters look to issues like a candidate's relationship with their ex-wife. Did they ever smoke? Where do they vacation? What's their exercise regimen? These are the kind of core bullshit issues that people really care about.
Now, in the past, whether the candidates are photogenic has been of key importance to voters who care about bullshit. Is that still the case today?
Oh, yeah, yes. And also, what a candidate wears at public appearances is very crucial to the bullshit-conscious voter.
You mean like where a candidate, for instance, wears a hard hat at a factory and talks about the local union, or let's say we see someone wearing blue jeans in a rural area?
Yes, that's the kind of local crowd-pandering bullshit that people are very passionate about.
Now, according to your research, what will be the top bullshit issues for 2008?
There's so many out there, it's really too early to call. But thanks to the internet, there's literally thousands of websites full of bullshit on virtually every candidate. So voters can log on to discuss that bullshit with other people who share an interest in the same kinds of bullshit.
I agree with you on that. I've even noticed that there's an incredible amount of bullshit being discussed on our news blog as well. Mr. O'Leary, how can we in the news media do a better job of focusing on bullshit and really hounding candidates on these petty issues?
The fact is, you've been doing a great job as it is. If it wasn't for the media, there'd be a lot less bullshit in these elections.
Well, thanks so much. Before we go, do you care to make a prediction for November 2008? Who's the top bullshitter so far in this election?
Difficult to say. No one party has a monopoly on bullshit.
I've always been a big fan of Hillary. She's so full of bullshit.
I think not just talking bullshit, but actually living the bullshit. Mm-hmm. That's the earmark of a true candidate and of a winner.
Well, thanks so much, and we will be right back after this small break.
Now, there's one thing you might have noticed I don't complain about. Politicians. Everybody complains about politicians. Everybody says they suck.
Yeah.
Well, where do people think these politicians come from? They don't fall out of the sky. They don't pass through a membrane from another reality. They come from American parents and American families, American homes, American schools, American churches, American businesses, and American universities, and they're elected by American citizens. This is the best we can do, folks. This is what we have to offer. It's what our system produces. Garbage in, garbage out. If you have selfish, ignorant citizens, you're going to get selfish, ignorant leaders. And term limits ain't going to do you any good. You're just going to wind up with a brand new bunch of selfish, ignorant Americans. So maybe it's not the politicians who suck. Maybe something else sucks around here, like the public. Yeah, the public sucks. There's a nice campaign slogan for somebody. The public sucks. Fuck hope. Fuck hope. Because if it's really just the fault of these politicians, then where are all the other bright people of conscience? Where are all the bright, honest, intelligent Americans ready to step in and save the nation and lead the way? We don't have people like that in this country. Everybody's at the mall, scratching his ass, picking his nose, taking his credit card out of his fanny pack and buying a pair of sneakers with lights in them. So I have solved this little political dilemma for myself in a very simple way. On election day, I stay home. I don't vote. Fuck them. Fuck them. I don't vote. Two reasons I don't vote. First of all, it's meaningless. This country was bought and sold and paid for a long time ago. The shit they shuffle around every 4 years doesn't mean a fucking thing. And secondly, I don't vote because I believe if you vote, you have no right to complain. People like to twist that around, I know. They say, well, if you don't vote, you have no right to complain. But where's the logic in that? If you vote and you elect dishonest, incompetent people, and they get into office and screw everything up, well, you are responsible for what they have done. You caused the problem. You voted them in. You have no right to complain. I, on the other hand, who did not vote, who, in fact, did not even leave the House on election day, I'm in no way responsible for what these people have done and have every right to complain as loud as I want about the mess you created that I had nothing to do with. So I know that a little later on this year, you're going to have another one of those really swell presidential elections that you like so much. You'll enjoy yourselves. It'll be a lot of fun. I'm sure as soon as the election is over, your country will improve immediately. As for me, I'll be home on that day doing essentially the same thing as you. The only difference is when I get finished masturbating, I'm going to have a little something to show for it, folks. Thank you very much.
Parting on the left, and now they're parting on the right. And the beards have all grown longer overnight. And I tip my hat to the new Constitution, take a bow for the new revolution. Smile and grin at the changes all around. Pick up my guitar and play, just like yesterday. Then I'll get on my knees and pray. We don't get fooled again. Oh no.
class struggle, my friends, is one of the major and central expressions of democracy. That's what class struggle is about. When they get up, you know, they do class warfare on us all the time. Taxes, tax cuts for the rich, this, that. They're always doing class war on us. The minute we rally and we start attacking this corporate rich, they say, oh, you're preaching class warfare. George Bush, George the First used to say that. The minute we start to fight back or answer back, oh, you're preaching class warfare. I have another name for that. It is class struggle. It is class warfare. The other name for it, when people become the active social agents of their own lives and go out and protest and try to better their lives, that another name for that is called democracy. And they wouldn't recognize it if you slap them right in the face with it. They wouldn't know what it is. And it was these economic royalists, the rich bankers, the merchant class, the slaveholders, they fought against political democracy as well as economic democracy. They fought against the elimination of property qualifications for voters and office holders. After all, they put that into the laws. They put that into the laws, those property qualifications. Those were their laws. They fought against extending the vote, universal suffrage for working men in the 1820s and 30s. They fought against suffrage for women. They fought against the abolition of slavery and Jim Crow. They fought against honest elections and democratic ballot access and proportional representation and campaign finance reform and securing civil liberties. And they're still fighting against it. Do you have the evidence? Have I proven my case? Just go out and look at it all. That's what they're doing. Political and economic democracy are the things that they fear the most. Democracy is always under siege and always endangered by plutocracy. So when we say that capitalism works or it doesn't work, we must specify for whom.
Let's be honest. You'll never win the lottery. On the other hand, the chances are pretty good that you'll slave away at some miserable job the rest of your life. That's because you were in all likelihood born into the wrong social class. Let's face it, you're a member of the working caste. Sorry. As a result, you don't have the education, upbringing, connections, manners, appearance, and good taste to ever become one of us. In fact, you'd probably need a book the size of the Yellow Pages to list all the unfair advantages we have over you. That's why we're so relieved to know that you still continue to believe all those silly fairy tales about justice and equal opportunity in America. Of course, in a hierarchical social system like ours, there's never been much room at the top to begin with. Besides, it's already occupied by us, and we like it up here so much that we intend to keep it that way. But at least there's usually someone lower in the social hierarchy you can feel superior to and kick in the teeth once in a while. Even a lonely dishwasher can easily find some poor slob further down in the pecking order to sneer and spit at. So be thankful for migrant workers, prostitutes, and homeless street people. Always remember that if everyone like you were economically secure and socially privileged like us, there would be no one left to fill all those boring, dangerous, low-paid jobs in our economy, and no one to fight our wars for us or blindly follow orders in our totalitarian corporate institutions, and certainly no one to meekly go to their grave without having lived a full and creative life. So please, keep up the good work. You also probably don't have the same greedy, compulsive drive to possess wealth, power, and prestige that we have, and even though you may sincerely want to change the way you live, you're also afraid of the very change you desire, thus keeping you and others like you in a nervous state of limbo. So you go through life mechanically, playing your assigned social role, terrified what others would think should you ever dare to break out of the mold. Naturally, we try to play you off against each other whenever it suits our purposes. High-waged workers against low-waged, unionized against non-unionized, black against white, male against female, American workers against Japanese, against Mexican against... We continually push your wages down by invoking foreign competition, the law of supply and demand, national security, or the bloated federal deficit. We throw you on the unemployed scrap heap if you step out of line or jeopardize our profits, and to give you an occasional break from the monotony of our daily economic blackmail, we allow you to participate in our staged, managed electoral shell games, better known to you ordinary folks as elections. Happily, you haven't a clue as to what's really happening. Instead, you blame aliens, tree-hugging environmental wackos, niggers, Jew bastards, feminazis, faggots, welfare queens, and countless others for your troubled situation. We're also very pleased that many of you still embrace the work ethic, even though most jobs in our economy degrade the environment, undermine your physical and emotional health, and basically suck your one and only life right out of you. We obviously don't know much about work, but we're sure glad you do. Of course, life could be different. Society could be intelligently organized to meet the real needs of the general population. You and others like you could collectively fight to free yourselves from our domination. But you don't know that. In fact, you can't even imagine that another way of life is possible. And that's probably the greatest, most significant achievement of our system. Robbing you of your imagination, your creativity, your ability to think and act for yourself. So we'd truly like to thank you from the bottom of our heartless hearts. Your loyal sacrifice makes possible our corrupt luxury. Your work makes our system work. Thanks so much for knowing your place without even knowing it.
Sing the song for the wrong and the wicked and the strong and the sick as thick as thieves. For the faceless fear that was never so near, too clear to misbelieve. Well, the sea is jumping salty and the porpoise has the blues. My recollection's faulty and I cannot find my shoes. And my wiring is misfiring due to cigarettes and booze. I'm behind in my dues. I just now got the news. He seems to tell us lies, and still we will believe him then. Together he will lead us into darkness, my friends. Let it fall down, let it fall down, let it all fall down. Let it fall down, let it fall down, let it all fall down. The man says, stand to one side, son. We got to keep the big ball rolling. It's just a question of controlling for whom the bell is tolling. Let it fall down, let it fall down, let it all fall down. Let it fall down, let it fall down, let it all fall down. But there'll be suffering and starvation in the streets, young man. Well, just where have you been, old man? Just look out of your window, man. Let it fall down, let it fall down, let it all fall down. Let it fall down, let it fall down, let it all fall down. Well, it ain't nobody's fault but our own. Still, at least we might could show the good sense to know when we've been wrong. And it's already taken far too long now. So we bring it to a stop, then we take it from the top. We let it settle on down softly, like you're gently falling snow. Or let it tumble down and topple like the temple long ago. But let it fall down, let it fall down, let it fall down. Let it fall down, let it fall down, let it all fall down. I keep hollering, timber, timber, I hope it don't fall on me. I'm
hollering timber, whoa, timber, let it all fall down. Well, let it fall down, let it fall down, let it all fall down. Together, let it fall down, let it fall down, let it all fall down. Let it fall down, let it fall down, let it all.